On May 25th, 2020, an African-American man named George Floyd was murdered during an arrest after he was allegedly passing a counterfeit $20 bill. This event triggered a conversation about the pervasive nature of racism. It made a lot of different communities across the world introspect not just on how they are affected by racism, but also how they contribute to systemic racism. One thing that is clear is that this is not just an American problem. This is not just a Western problem. This is a problem that is common across the world. And it is important that we continue to highlight the narratives and the struggles of people who have to experience it on a daily basis. And through this episode of Peace in a Pod, that is exactly what we are attempting to do. Now, a bit later in the podcast, we'll talk about how systemic racism is in the global north, and we'll engage in conversations about it. But just for a second here, I also wanted to highlight how prevalent and how systemic and how institutionalized racism is in the global south. I'll give you an example from India. So just this July, two African students, Diaby Abraham and Benjamin Emmanuel, were brutally beaten up by security personnel on a university campus in India for violating an administrative rule. Now, what is very similar in all the videos of violence against black men that we are seeing is just the sheer overwhelming use of force against them. A similar thing was happening in China during COVID as well, where African students, African expatriates, African nationals were being violently removed from their residences for risk of carrying disease. African students are, of course, put in a very vulnerable situation in these different examples, and they are often at the front lines of this systematized violence and institutional thinking prevalent across the world. Now, we here at the Graduate Institute and International Geneva more broadly, we come from such diverse backgrounds. We are from different countries, and we're interacting with different people with their own perspectives. So we might not experience racism on a daily basis, but if there is one thing that you should take away from this episode, it is that systemic racism is a real thing, that conversations about systemic racism are long overdue and they should not be suppressed in any way. And I would personally encourage you to have conversations about this topic, not just with your friends, but also your family members, and really address how these videos that we're seeing are emblematic of a systematized violent structure that is targeting these communities because of their race. And it is important that we address this through our podcast. And that is exactly what we're going to do now. We've been joined by Nora Tan, who is a distinguished member of the Peacebuilding Initiative. And she's in conversation with Catherine Guccini and Kennedy Massey, who are two members of the Graduate Institute. Through their perspectives, we are going to try to understand not just this particular event, but also racism in all its different forms. Here's Nora.
Hello, Catherine and Kennedy. We're very excited to have the both of you join us for the conversation today.
Thanks, Nora. It's good to be here.
Hi there, Nora. It's good to be here.
At the time of this recording, we've just seen the height of civil unrest pass. I want to start off by discussing the global response and impact of George Floyd's death that I think was unprecedented in its scale. Violence against African Americans is not new, so why do you think that Floyd's death touched such a nerve? Perhaps we can start off with Catherine on this one.
Yeah, so I think that the age that we're in at the moment is one where social media just allows news to travel so much quicker, sharing things on WhatsApp or Instagram, on Facebook. And I think in particular, this video was very pertinent just because you see the actual face of the murderer and then you see Floyd, the victim. And I think just seeing those faces and seeing that whole 8 minutes, it was really quite difficult to watch and very disturbing. And I think that just seeing the lack of remorse shown by the police officer, someone who was supposed to protect, I think that's really how it just touched the nerve so much for so many people.
Completely agree with the comments that Catherine has just mentioned. To a greatest extent, I think these protests have actually been amplified and more people have joined in, I think, due to the pandemic as well. I think more people having to be inside due to the lockdown, also experiencing and seeing massive loss of lives. And on top of that, still seeing incidents of police brutality that have been exacerbated for so long, I think have made people, I think, to a certain extent, more empathetic. And I think it's part of the reason why the BLM protests this time around, I think, had a more participation across races.
What were the most significant moments for you throughout it?
I mean, Black Lives Matter and protests against any form of racial segregation have been existing for quite a long time. The difference this time around, as I mentioned, is seeing that this movement was not just Black people fighting alone. For the first time, you see greater diverse participation, which is really, in my opinion, it's positive news and gives more encouragement that maybe we're going towards, we're progressing as a race. And my personal experience as the African Student Association president here at the Institute, organizing the Black Lives Matter here in Geneva, to a great extent, I felt like there was more emphasis on education and people wanted to know more. And so this particularly, I think, was the difference. And my experience going to school in the US and so participating in these protests, I still noticed at the time, at least, that it was very singular. So it was mostly black people, essentially, we fight for our rights or fighting against all forms of oppression. But I think this time around, we're seeing, I think, positive progress in terms of diverse participation.
On that note of diverse participation, Catherine, what do you think were the key differences between the nature of the protests in the UK and the US?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting overall, just the differences and the contrast between the UK and US. I think you kind of have to start with the history of both situations, where in America you have a history of slavery and oppression on that home turf. And then with the UK, it's a history of colonialism and empire, and a lot of the overt violence was conducted abroad. And so I think, let's say, just in the past few decades, there's been a lot of kind of hiding of the past or not talking about it. Yeah, I think even in the education system in the UK, you know, we don't really learn about colonialism. Sorry. And so I think just that kind of difference historically has made, I don't know, the responses to these protests differ quite a lot. So I think there's a key difference with police brutality. I mean, just like quite simply put, in America, police are always armed, whereas in the UK, it's only certain units that will carry arms. And so I think that can already make or, you know, contribute to the violence in the US. But, police brutality does exist in the UK. And I think politically, I'm not sure if there are that many differences in some ways. I think both of the country's leaders seem to show, you know, in weaker terms, a lack of empathy. But, you know, clearly Trump does not support the BLM movement. And we can go into a whole lot of that. But for the sake of time, I won't go into that. I think personally, I've just seen in the UK that the protests have been mostly peaceful. There's been a lot of questioning of history and of, you know, the different statues around the UK and why they're there and why they're celebrating slavery. And it's really brought up some interesting debates and questions of, you know, national identity and people who, yeah, feel that that's under threat because of a desire to not celebrate the wrongs of a past. And so, yeah, it's really an interesting one to look at the similarities, but the differences between these two country contexts, and the fact that Black people are minorities in both contexts, Black people of color. And so what is similar is just the experience of oppression or of exclusion. And it's not that everyone feels that every single day to, you know, to the point where they can't work or they can't function in a society, but there are still, you know, significant differences in wages or various things that just show the inequalities that still exist. Yeah, so that would be my way to address that question.
Like normal, it goes to like normal day-to-day life of a person searching for a job, of minority families not having equal access to education, healthcare, especially at a time like this during the pandemic. And I think these movements are so pivotal in ensuring that big civil society groups, but also big organizations. For example, if you look at the United Nations, as you mentioned, to really like come up with policies that can be implemented to solve the problem. It's one thing, I think, standing against forms of segregation, racial segregation. It's another thing to do something about it. I think the value of this protest this time around is to really ensure that something is done about it soon and immediately, because people are losing their lives, and to a great extent, a lot of people are being treated unfairly. So how do we make sure that we live in a world where every single person, regardless of where they come from, whether it's from a race perspective, ethnicity, religion, have equal opportunity to essentially live a peaceful life, right? And so I think it goes into the implementation of policy, so we don't see more people like George Floyd, people of color suffering from police brutality, people having equal opportunities in terms of education, healthcare, and I think that's the start, right? Get this conversation to action. And I think that's what these movements have done. So I hope that's what the big policymakers, the big organizations involved are doing. But I think that's the whole point of the movements.
So I think that protests are really just an effective way of a society showing and voicing a concern and an issue, something that they, you know, want to put a big red flag on and say, please do something about this. And so I think the value of protests is just to see how civil society feels about something. And I think, you know, if we imagine the opposite, if there were no protests for the Black Lives Matter movement, if there was nothing, you know, from civil society, then there would really be no way of policymakers knowing that, you know, this is a huge concern and this is an issue that's ongoing. And I think for the peace building community and for, you know, practitioners and people who work for, you know, governments across the world, I think this is a big red flag and something that needs to be addressed. I think the best case is that, you know, that voices are heard and that all these protests do actualize into institutional change, because that's the thing with the BLM movement is against institutional racism. And so, as Kennedy said, it's you know, for everyone to have the equal opportunity to live a peaceful life. And so it's the role and responsibility of peace building actors in Geneva and across the world to really take heed and to listen to that and to do something about this.
Thank you, Catherine. Now, moving forward towards a future outlook, I think this next question is potentially a contentious one, because I'm quite cognizant of the responsibility often placed on people of color to educate quote-unquote allies of any given movement. That being said, this contention is perhaps something that is worth spotlighting even. And with that, my final question is, what would you share as a word of guidance to those seeking to ally themselves with the movement?
I generally think for people who want to be aligned with the movement, one, it's important to stay educated and to acknowledge what is going on, that it is a serious problem and people are losing their lives and something has to be done about it. I don't think we necessarily have to wait. I don't think as an ally, I don't think you have to wait for a policymaker to implement action. I think as individuals of the world, we can take small actions day to day in standing against racism and essentially ensuring that every single person around you is also involved and educated about it. And I think at the end of the day, it's important to also just really try to essentially feel, have some sort of empathy, because I think it's through that you can understand how big of a problem this is. So I think really asking questions and doing the level best to be engaged in all forms. Rightfully, I understand that it might be a bit difficult, because to a great extent, if you're not facing them, it's difficult to understand. But the more conversations amongst people in a community, different races going through different issues, the better informed and the easier it is to get that empathy. So it's coming from within. Like you know, as people of color, you can't force someone to be progressive and fight for certain human rights, they have to particularly feel deep inside that this is something that has to be solved. And so I think slowly but surely we're getting there. I think as a word of advice is just staying involved, staying educated, and you know, if possible, ask questions where people are not sure. Like, and I understand it can be uncomfortable, but we have to have these difficult conversations.
Yeah, I think just to echo what you're saying, Kennedy, it's just a key thing is empathy. And I think, I guess the term ally is one that I found quite new for myself. So, you know, I am a person of color. I'm originally Trinidadian with a Sri Lankan mother. So like mixed heritage. And I think it's interesting when we get into the naming of things and, you know, who defines what is black or what is an ally, and am I, you know, where do I fit in that as someone who's mixed? And I think it can bring into question a whole load of, yeah, I think just different ways to question the names that we give to things. But I think ultimately the importance, whether you term it an ally or just, I don't know, someone who's a supporter of the BLM movement, however you term it, I think the key is empathy and having empathy for other people and being able to, you know, align yourself with, I think, with humanity and with just the desire for everyone to be able to have equal opportunity and equal access to, you know, to just live a peaceful life. And I think that's the key. And
so I think we've really touched on a broad range of themes today that could stretch the discussion endlessly. But what I think is apparent in reflection is that reaching a point where we're looking to translate this global outburst of energy and emotion, this moment that we've all witnessed, into something more substantial, something that outlasts the attention span of headlines. With this, I look forward to where the following discussions and the broader movement will take us. Once again, I'd like to thank Catherine Kennedy for joining us today.
As always, we want to thank you for listening to Peace in a Pod. This episode is very close to us because this topic is something that we at the Graduate Institute and in international affairs study very deeply, but we often forget the narratives of people who might be experiencing it. And so we're very grateful to both Catherine and Kennedy for sharing their experiences with us. I also want to thank Nora for moderating this immensely interesting discussions and coming up with all these great questions that really highlight the experience of Catherine and Kennedy. As always, all social media pages are at your disposal in the show notes. We will also add some extra reading down below. I also encourage you very strongly, if you're part of the Graduate Institute community, to look at the Black Conversations Initiative, which engages in a lot of different narratives and does an excellent job highlighting what we in our small episode have tried to bring forward as well. Thank you so much and hope to see you next episode.